And this half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, light, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. We have a multitude of insurance needs, and we need somebody to manage all those needs and do everything they can to save us money. That is Purdy Insurance. Customer service means everything to them. At Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Joined now by the outstanding Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
You're welcome. As always, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, so Steelers-Ravens, take three. Steelers down the stretch. Somebody said to me, well, they backed in. Nobody backs into the playoffs. You play all these months, you've got the better record, you're in. It doesn't mean you played your best football at the end, but you're in. But they've got a lot of issues. And let's start with the Pickens part of it. I mean, I'm watching Saturday night. Neil, I mean, you can get emotional and upset and mad at everybody else and scream, get me the ball. When they get you the ball, you better catch it.
To put it mildly, yeah. What I saw was a guy that can't focus on what he's doing, carried with him the last drop into the next two drops, and inexplicably ran inside toward the numbers on a deep play with no timeout under a minute to go. If Pickens, the defensive back gave him the game, he really did. It was a catastrophic mistake by the Bengals defensive player, whoever that was. Pickens is able to stack him, which means get on top of him,
right?
And you don't have anybody in front of you in either direction. Anybody would know that that ball is going to the sideline. It's mm-hmm. not going to the middle of the field. Pickens mm-hmm. is dripping to the middle of the field, and he stops his momentum leaning toward the middle of the field. And the ball goes over his head. It's bizarre to me because one thing I will give George Pickens, and I've been saying this since they drafted him, I don't know if there's anybody in the NFL better at tracking the ball in the air than him. I mean, he's got an elite-level skill when it comes to that. He completely lost it on that play. It's hard to imagine the drops, what happened leading into the game. During the game, as we would find out later, there are clips of him arguing with fans on the sideline. It's hard to imagine that those things were not going on in his head as he was going down the field and what could have been the ultimate redemption arc for that game. Because he catches that, he gets out of bounds. They've got plenty of time for a long Boswell field goal. And I'm not going to guarantee that, but Boswell's pretty good. He's been hitting a few, and that's what the team needed him to do at that point. He still can't do it. And that, to me, it was almost worse than the lack of desire to get down the field and carry a safety to open up the middle of the field on the interception against the Chiefs. And this stuff is happening every single game. I'm taking on the same tone, Steve, that I talked to you last year about Deontay Johnson.
That's right.
It's mind-boggling mm-hmm. how individually selfish a player can be amid massive amounts of criticism. He's just going to keep doing it, and to a point where it's they don't have anybody else that they can count on, but they can't count on him either. And that's a problem, and we're seeing it in the last 4 weeks. The Steelers are objectively one of the worst teams in the NFL, not the playoff field, the NFL. And they've got a real problem. They went from a two-game lead on the division to traveling to the hottest team in football for another huge underdog first-round playoff game. And, I don't think you need to ask what my thought is on this game.
Right.
I don't like their chances all that much. And at some point, something's going to happen. Pickens isn't the only issue, but they needed him to step up and be a mature leader on this team this year. And to put it mildly, he failed to do that.
Look, and again, I don't want to pick on him because, again, the Steelers' first-round pick didn't play any downs this year. And they were counting on him to play a lot of downs. How difficult is it for Dan Moore, especially in protection right now? And what does that do to the Steelers' offense because he might not be consistent enough?
Yeah, it's interesting because Dan Moore was playing pretty well the first half of the season.
Yes, he was.
Now, I'm not going to call him the next Jonathan Ogden or anything, but he played well. It was the best football of his career, bar none. I don't know what has happened to him, but yeah, he's falling apart, and he's a liability at this point. To suggest that he might be the worst tackle on the team says a lot, considering who's on the other side and the struggles that Broderick Jones has had. But the line is collapsing from the outside in now, and that's tough to handle because you've got a rookie center and a rookie right guard, and now the rookie right guard has a broken hand. So you're going into this game against a very aggressive defense that knows the vulnerability of the offensive line, coupled with the lack of a legitimate passing attack. They're going to attack A and B gap, land, air, and C the entire game. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the Steelers' offense is going to be able to handle that. And you're going to see a lot of what happened the last time they played. Eventually, they just broke down. Russell Wilson made some pretty big mistakes, particularly in the second half, and the Ravens won walking away. A game that could have been competitive. They were competitive within that game early on. They got some early turnovers. They had a chance to compete down the stretch, but the good teams are the ones that can, you know, kind of jack it up a notch in the second half. And the Steelers, you know, really just kind of wilted away from that. A large part of that is I don't want to pin it all on Dan Moore, but collectively the offensive line is not able to handle the pressure over the course of a game anymore. They were early on, and that's when they scored points. Now they're not, and you know, everyone's going to want to blame, in some order, Arthur Smith, Russell Wilson, and George Pickens, but the reality is the offensive line is just simply not as effective as it was early on in the season, and that's kind of coming to bear right now for whatever future they might have this season.
I know we're talking about Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and so forth. What, you know, what does the absence of Flowers mean to Baltimore and potentially mean to this game as to how you scheme it up?
It's funny that you ask that, because Zay Flowers in, what, two seasons with the team might be the best receiver they've ever had.
Right.
And I'm not even saying that he's a phenomenal receiver. He's good. He's dangerous. He gives them big play ability on high percentage throws, which is exactly why they drafted him. He works underneath very well. He's dangerous after the catch, and he can surprise you and get deep down the field. If they are without him, I think the offense loses a step, but what it's going to force them to do is just play the game that the way that they typically want to play it, which is handling what happens after the snap in an option fashion. Let Lamar decide what he's going to do with the ball based on what the defense is giving him. Mm-hmm. To not have Flowers in there, I think it definitely limits their big play ability. But, you know, I see Derrick Henry cracking off big plays all the time. I think they can flip the field with their run game. And certainly Jackson, if he gets loose, he's able to make chunk plays down the field, and they know that. So you're still needing to, you know, defend with 11 every player on the field. And it's still a very difficult task, but they're not going to be as explosive, I think. And maybe that, you know, keeps a team like the Steelers in the game longer than they would without the big knockout punch ability. I don't know if the Steelers wanted to take a player off the field for the Ravens, I don't think it would be Zay Flowers. Put it that
right.
way.
Yeah.
He's a good player, definitely a difference maker, but they're still going to be able to function at a pretty high level without him. It's a matter of how you can defend Jackson, how you can keep him in the pocket and try to make plays on the ball in the air.
No question about that. That's a big part of it. The NFL doesn't need to do anything. I'm going to preface it by saying they don't need to do anything. They're the NFL. I mean, Sunday night, the Golden Globe Awards went up head-to-head with the Vikings and the Lions, and the Vikings and Lions buried that group. I mean, I don't have to look at the ratings. You know, they buried them. But how much would it help the league competitively if a 7 were to somehow knock off a 2 here in one of these rounds, because 7-2s have not been competitive?
That's a good question. I don't know, because you don't want to take the 2s that they have this year. I think are you know, pretty story laden teams.
That's right.
You know, it's a ravenous market, kind of that villain role in Philadelphia, whether it's fair or not, their fans created for them. People watch them. You want to know what's going on there. Mm-hmm. They're a fun, enjoyable team to watch. Superstar laden. On the other side, I think it's, you know, kind of America's new team, Buffalo. People want to see Buffalo win for the sake of the fans. Josh Allen's very likable. He's very fun to watch. I don't think the NFL would want to see either of those teams lose. And at the same time, though, I think the overarching point is exactly what you're saying. The gap between those two seems to be significant come playoff time because the twos don't just win every time. They rout whoever it is that they play. Right. And that's without a bye week. It's a home game. It's not like they win every home game they play by 40 points. They're the second seed. They're not even the top seed in the conference. I think it goes to show that the parity of the NFL, it can go to 12 teams. You push it beyond that, though, you start to get into murky waters come playoff time. The real playoff contenders, maybe this is the way to put it. Two teams that you have right now are not Johnny-come-lately teams. They've been there. Nick Sirianni's been in the fire. Those players have had deep playoff experience before. A bit of a letdown last year, whatever it is that happened to them the second half of the year. The Eagles have overcome that. But they've been there. They know how to do this. And with that, there's extra preparation. There's other things that they'll do that they'll save for playoff time. Probably whoever it is that clinched the seventh seed it had to exert everything they had just to get into that spot, so they don't really have anything left. Factor in, obviously, the home field advantage, but I don't think that the seven seed has as much as the two seed does at that time of the year. So the idea of them scoring an upset seems pretty drastic. You know, anything can happen any given Sunday and all that, but I don't think this is the year for that because I think you've got probably three very strong teams in each conference, seeded 1 through 3. Yeah. And some, you know, there might be an upset or two here and there, but it's a pretty good bet that you're going to have the top three seeds in the divisional round. Just my take on it. I don't know if the NFL would love to have more games. But yeah, the wild card games have been kind of up and down. You know, you've had some crazy comebacks the last couple of years, but it's not typically coming from the seven seed. The seven seed's getting boat raced in, you know, whoever they're playing, wherever they're playing it.
The college football playoff is going on right now, and I've been asked many times if there's any adjustment I would make to it. And I said I would not give the four conference champions, the top four ranked conference champions, the top four seeds. I'd give them automatic entry into the tournament, but I would still seed them 1 through 12. Well, the Minnesota Vikings won 14 games this year, and they're a 5 seed in all of this. Why won't the NFL change that part where, yes, you won the NFC West and you're in, but you're playing at Minnesota. You're not playing in Los Angeles.
I think part of it's a chain reaction of things. You need to put the value of the conference ahead of other games. The reason they do that, they realign the league to have equal amounts of teams in each division. Not too many, but the right amount. So that becomes, you have three rivals. Those are six big games for your team. That's a large chunk of the schedule. Those games have to mean more. I think that the intensity of, you know, your typical NFL fan, your Joe Sweatsock wants to see wins over the divisional opponents. There's something there for that. There's something about playing for something, even if it's not going to be a Super Bowl. You had the division championship. You have bragging rights over the other teams who were there. With that, there's got to be some type of reward beyond that. And a first round, at least a first round home game in the playoffs makes sense. Now, I don't know if there is a pure way to do it. And certainly I think college football is going to have four or five variations of this in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. I won't even get into that. That's a whole other ball of wax. But as far as the NFL goes, I think you need to have divisional significance. If you don't, you're just kind of playing in a vacuum. Every game matters. We know all of that, but there's got to be something personal. There's got to be some emotional investment. That Pittsburgh playing Tennessee is one thing. Pittsburgh playing Cleveland, Cincinnati, or Baltimore is something else. Mm-hmm. You know, fans want to get up for that. I don't think it's that big of a deal because I don't see a team like Minnesota playing as the fifth seed very often.
Right.
But what I do know, in fairness, is the Vikings had an opportunity to not have that happen, and, well, that didn't work out so well for them.
No.
So it, sometimes that's just the way it goes. That's football. It's not as if when you get situations where there are two 14-plus win teams in a division, which is not common historically, mm-hmm. you're typically going to have a bad division champion, and that's who you're going to be playing against. The fact that the game is in Los Angeles, yes, that's, you know, I think a bit of a downside to it, but I don't think it's enough to say don't let the division champion get something for being the division champion. Don't, you know, take their focus off of that. We still want them to play division opponents twice a year, but there's no point in us doing that. So basically, if you unravel the whole thing, you're playing against the whole league, and you don't get to have those rivalry games nearly as often, which my guess is the NFL kind of patterned itself off of college with the idea in mind that from a marketing standpoint, it's easier for us to sell Carolina versus Atlanta because they hate each other. Mm-hmm. Now, there's something to that, even if they're not historically great teams, that they haven't been around all that long. We can build something with this. Let's try to increase the emotional investment into the product itself.
I'll ask you one more. It's about Detroit. We know how incredibly banged up they are on defense. And then against Minnesota, Aaron Glenn, with his players, dialed up a beautiful performance. So let me ask you about Detroit. What makes them special, has a chance to be special, and how much do you think last year's run helped them?
What I noticed last night watching Detroit along those lines is it seemed like the same team. And what I mean by that is they were doing – they won situationally. I think Sam Darnold missed five touchdown passes or something in the first half. He was just off. Mm-hmm. And a large part of that was Aaron Glenn, who, by the way, if he didn't have a head coaching job before last night, he does now.
Right.
Aaron Glenn dialed up a plan that was not personnel specific, but they found a way to do enough to speed Darnold up. And that's the one thing Kevin O'Connell did to make Darnold a reasonable MVP candidate this season. He slowed him down. He got him working within himself. He got him working within a structure. The Lions, all they really did was move their linebackers back. It wasn't more than that. Because of that, it felt, and I wasn't there to ask O'Connell if this is what happened, but it felt like they went away from play action because of the depth of the linebackers. Didn't feel like they were going to throw them off all that much. But what they kept trying to do was throw in coverage against the linebackers, but they never moved. They sat where they were, and Darnold was like, "You're not moving. I don't know what to do." And then he gets excited, and that's when he turns into, you know, kind of Darnold the strong-armed circus idiot and launches balls 10 feet over guys' heads. He did that several times, and he had open receivers, but mm-hmm. Oftentimes it was like he didn't have it on his first look. So because of that, he gets flustered. He's not sure what to do. His mechanics go out the window, and he just leans on his arm the whole time. Detroit has an ability to kind of take away the superpower of their opponent. And Aaron Glenn is a huge part of that. And that the commonality to me when I was watching the Lions versus the other times I've watched them this year is there's different guys on the field. But by and large, they have a schematic advantage, a tactical advantage, just in we're going to do something that's going to take away your fastball. Can you locate any other pitch? Let's find out. And Darnold last night was not up to that challenge at all. And he kind of regressed to what we've seen Darnold be to this point in his career. But that's no easy feat either. That's what's so fun about the Lions. They're so good at that. And on top of that, you know, they were getting beat up pretty good. The Vikings defense did a great job against them in the first half.
Yeah.
Really, the Vikings should have been up by two scores going into it. But the Lions kept doing what they do. They ran the ball well. They got explosives out of the run game. And they blew the doors off them in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was over probably at the end of the third quarter. But Detroit is just so consistent and they're so balanced. Everybody there buys into what they're doing. They're a special team. Mm-hmm. They really are. I think, you know, if I was making a bet, to me right now, Lions Ravens in the Super Bowl, and that's going to be a fun game to watch if that's what it ends up being. But I think, you know, pre-playoffs, I think the Lions are one of the best regular season teams we've seen in the last several years. They're really good. They're balanced all around. They can kick well as well. Just a tough opponent to have to prepare for and play against. And Minnesota, unfortunately, picked a tough year to have a 14-win season with Detroit within that division. You know, there's not much else you can do. Tip your hat and try to figure it out. But it's just a very well-coached, very disciplined, very intelligent football team that can do a lot of different things to beat you.
The Ravens were confused when they drafted Lamar Jackson. People were confused when the Lions drafted Gibbs. Somebody knew something. Neil, you always know something. Thank you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's Half Hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.